gain on the board.
Then the gain is now being brought down on everything else.
Check, 1, 2. Oh, that's pretty loud.
That's Brila?
Sabrila.
Hello, Rupert.
Too loud, too loud.
Okay, hello, Rupert.
No, not you.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Sounds from the 70s with Gary and Rob, sometimes referred to as Lionel Richie's love child.
Lionel Richie's love child. I had nothing for that.
You Ed McMahon or what the?
Would you please welcome Lionel Richie's love child?
We're coming to you from outside the greater metropolis area, from a place we lovingly refer to as Hicksville.
Hicksville.
And the funny thing is that we came into Hicksville tonight, and then we got lost and left Hicksville on the way back to the big city.
Hicksville has a whole lot of exits, and not many entrances.
That's what she said. Anyways. So we did, actually. We all of a sudden we found ourselves going back into the city after we just got into the little hamlet.
Our travels here have been amazing.
Amazingly aggravating, and they never seem to let up. It's always one catastrophe after another.
Just when you think you've had all the catastrophes you can have, a new one crops up. Poof.
Poof.
Now, on today's episode, we will have the last album in our theme of funk bands in the 1970s. And we will put the spotlight on the Commodores. Sorry, Rob. I was kind of freaking out, Rob, by making him think that I wanted him to say something, which I did not want him to do. The Commodores and their 1976 album, Hot on the Tracks. You got to say it like that. Lionel Richie says, if you're going to talk about their album, you got to say it hot on the tracks.
Make it melodic, make it rhythmic, but don't make it musical.
It's also known by its working title, On the Hot Tracks.
On the Hot Tracks.
See, you can actually take the words, spin them around, and it pretty much means the same thing.
I wonder if the real title was just a big mix-up then.
Yeah, it was. How'd you know that?
Knew it.
You don't do the homework like I do, but you still knew that.
Nope.
What was I going to say? Oh, before we start today's clam bake, and yes, it is a clam bake. I don't know what I'm talking about here because cough. So maybe I should have looked at the script before we done the show.
Plenty of time to look at the script. Listen, I'll entertain while you find your place in the script.
Oh, I don't want to talk about that.
Okay.
That was 2 weeks ago, and it's immaterial now. So we're not going to talk about that. I'm sorry. I just thought that there would be just a jibber-jabber as usual, but there was something I want to talk about 2 weeks ago. Last week, unfortunately, I got sick, as I usually do for every time we either have a week coming up or I have a week off. One of us is usually sick. We never get to enjoy it. So it's been 2 weeks since we've done a show, which means this gets complicated. We don't have a show on next week, but we will be doing a show next week to cover up for the week that I missed.
We're doing a thing we don't have.
Whatever. Doing a thing we don't have. See, I even caught me thinking about that, which is something I don't usually do. I just usually let it go.
I should really apologize. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yesterday, I should let you know, we kind of got hit with a mallet yesterday. Yesterday morning, got up, and this is becoming commonplace, but yesterday really hit me hard. We lost Robbie Robertson yesterday as we are taping this show, and that got me big time. It's a little raw, so I don't really want to talk about it this week, but what I will do is that when we take next week off and come back, I was going to do a theme of 4 weeks, 4 albums, but we're going to come back and we're going to immediately do a band album because Robbie's one of my all-time heroes, and this one really hurt, and it wasn't anything I was expecting. So we're going to come back and do that, and instead of 4 albums in this theme, we're just going to do 3 and give an album to Robbie. And it's a good theme because I promised this theme about a year and a half ago, and I'm finally getting around to it. And I know, I'll save that. Anyways, and I'm not going to talk, I have a lot to say about Robbie, but I'm not going to say it this week because it's
too
difficult.
Too new.
Very difficult. And that's all you hear on the radio. I drove home yesterday. That's all I heard.
You got to collect your thoughts.
And I broke down in the car.
Collect your thoughts.
I did. They played Fallen Angel by Robbie, and I lost it in the car. And then I was coming here, coming to pick up Rob today to come to the Hicksville, and they're playing, you know, the band and Robbie, and it's just like, it's too hard at the moment. So anyways, that's what we're going to do in 2 weeks, and we're just losing people left and right, people. It's just too much. We're losing our icons in Canada. Oh, you know, in the last year, less than a year, we've lost 3 of our biggest icons, not including, of course, the only ones we really have left are Neil Young and Joni Mitchell. We've lost Ian Tyson, we've lost Gordon Lightfoot, and now we've lost Robbie Robertson. And when does it end? Anyways, I gotta stop. Today, though, we have something very special.
Ooh.
Do you know what special we have planned for us?
No, because we've never had anything special before.
No, this is always special when we have it.
Viewer mail!
Well, we don't have viewer mail.
Oh.
Because we don't have viewers.
Nobody.
It is email time.
Okay.
It would be listener
mail. Listener email.
Listener email, it would be.
I'm out of touch.
You are. You're kind of a person who, like, I'm still watching my radio or my computer, waiting for those things to pop out of my computer. Anyways, you know, everybody loves email. We used to do this every week, which I find hard to believe because we used to do this every week.
But then
I didn't want to do it every week. And then the questions started to get duplicated because we started answering all the questions. There's not a heck of a lot of questions to ask after a while. Anyways, we love email. And it doesn't come often, maybe twice a year. But when we do it, we are filled with joy. We love our audience, don't we?
We certainly do. How can we not?
Well, there are times. Now, this is where we receive questions or statements about life from you, our listener, and we try and answer the best we can without exerting much sweat. So we don't want to think about it too much, but we still give you an answer.
Okay.
Rob will be helping me, doing his best Ed McMahon.
Don't think.
As we go to email number 1.
All right.
No. And Rob will be doing his best Ed McMahon. Okay, so here we go. We're going to do email number 1. No, here we're going to try this again. We should edit this out, but I want people to hear what I have to work with. Okay? Okay.
I have little memory of Ed McMahon.
You just did it earlier. I just said it earlier in the show. We've only been on for 9 minutes. With the Lionel Richie thing. Okay. You say email number 1.
I say email number 1.
Email number 1. That's how you do it.
I'll take your word for
it. Man. Are you okay? Are they going to bring you back to the sanitarium again?
I kept thinking I was going to have to come up with a question and you'd put an envelope to your head and then answer it.
You should do that. Karnak. We should do that. I was just thinking, I'm thinking of Karnak and I'm not going to.
How do the listeners know we're not already doing it?
So here we go again for the 4th time with email number one.
Hit me.
Okay, we're gonna scrap it and just go on. Rob isn't getting it, so I will do it. You know, I'll do it myself. We're gonna do now for the fifth time. I gotta do everything on this show.
Yeah, I get such unclear instructions, and then they jumble up in my head.
Email number one. Email number one. Okay, thanks, Rob.
That's pretty good.
This email is from Donnell in Ireland. Okay. Not sure where in Ireland because he doesn't say.
We'll just say Ireland.
But I'm guessing from the tome. Did I actually write that? From the tome?
You did because I can't see it and have not seen the script.
I'm guessing from the tome of this question, he's from Cork. So, Donald from Cork, I don't know if he's from Cork. We're just saying
he's
from
Cork.
He is. So, Donald from Cork. It sounds like I'm insulting him when I do that.
I think it's how you raise the volume level of particular.
It's cool. It makes it sound like I'm angry at him. Yeah. So, Donald from Cork asks, you guys said quite a while ago that you would have Bora Bora back on the show.
Oh, yeah.
But still, nothing. It seems like you lie a lot on the show. Well, now, hold on a second. First off, Donald from Cork, which may not be the place you're from in Ireland. In case you are from Cork, it would be a good guess, though. We do lie a lot on the show.
Quite a bit.
But we don't do it on purpose.
Not about the music.
Not on purpose. It just doesn't always work out the way we want it to sometimes. Like we said we were going to have...
Foster Brooks?
No, that was a lie. That was a purpose lie. That was an on-purpose lie. We said we were going to have like... and we're going to do this, I think, for the 200th episode. What we promised it much earlier was the... where we would show the show on video.
Video, actually, do the thing and get the thing with the thing and then do that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where we would actually have an audio and video of this show. I think, and it's coming up very quickly, this is like the 184th show or something like that. So we have to get our shit together. But again, we do a promise that may not come true, but we want to just videotape our 200th show and tape more shows after that. So it'd be like it would be like you get to see it and watch it. And if you just want to listen to it afterwards, it'll be there. I don't know how it works, but we can do it. It's just that we have so much to do.
We may have to hire someone.
And when I say we, it's me.
Yeah.
On this show that I never kind of get around to it. But in answer to your question, what happened with Bora Bora is that, first of all, he's gotten busy because he's in the middle of a divorce because he's Bora Bora and he's married to a woman. And right there, she should have left a long time ago. The man is irascible, I guess is what you could say.
It's not that just she's a woman. Anyone would find Bora Bora.
Yeah, he's abrasive.
Over too much.
He is over too much.
That's how I describe it. And I stand by that misuse of words.
He is, he's a person that no matter what you talk about, he won't agree with you. Even if he does, he will disagree with you.
He's a contrary. Contrary sort of chap.
He's a contrary. You spent like a week with him when you were in France there at his place, and you found out that he was not, he wasn't fun to be with.
I'm a cheerful kind of sunny side of life person. Bora Bora, he's more of the opposite. More of an opposite.
He's more like, I don't like that, I don't like that, and why are you here?
He lives. He lives to not like. That's what he'd die if he could not.
He's a very
if he had to like everything.
Predictable critic, though.
Yeah, he is.
So first of all, he hasn't sent us many scripts because he's been going through this thing, and second of all, the scripts that he has sent has been not good enough or very vitriolic to the point that we can't put it on.
I'm just gonna. Err on the side of caution here and say that they don't translate well.
They don't translate well because there's a lot of hostility about everything. But I'm not promising anything, but we are still working with him, and we are still hoping in future shows to have Bora Bora on here, but I don't know, 50-50 right now. Yeah, 50-50. He's just as hard to work with as he was before. I don't even know why we took him back in the first place, to be honest with
you. You know, the one thing is his words really entertain.
Oh, they do.
Nobody puts together words like a guy who can't speak English.
Yes, that is. That is funny, isn't it?
Yeah. It is.
That was actually a good question from Donald from Cork. But I didn't quite like your tone, Donald, and maybe you can work on that. So that's kind of our instructions for you, I guess, on how to be a better person is to be nicer. Be like us, be nice.
Yeah. I hope that's helped you out some.
Stupid fire. Anyways, so
and has answered your question.
I wonder why we get emails anyways when I'm like that with people. So this is email number two. Email number two.
I love it when you do that.
Yeah, because you don't do it. It'd be funnier if you did it, but you still don't grasp the whole idea. So
I'm going to show up for rehearsal and not this week.
See, my voice is going because I'm doing everything.
You got to do
everything. All the time.
You're going to get wiped out. You got to stop.
Well, I'll stop you, all right.
Please continue.
So this is from Steve in Dallas, Texas. Woohoo, get that bull. Woohoo, Steve. That's Texas. I bet you somebody writes in and thinks, nah, he can't make fun of this. I can make fun of anything.
Yeah. That sometimes makes me happy that we're nowhere near people.
You know, Steve, there's only two things that come out of Texas, and that's steers and deers. And which one are you? Are you a steer or a deer? Think about it. Think about it. I can't say the other word. No.
You can't. You got to make up something.
So I made up something. But you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I guess.
Anyways, Steve. Oh, why did I do that? Okay, sorry. Let's do that again. Anyway, Steve. Steve asks why. I do that to Rob, too. I say, what do you think about that? Rob. And I don't even mean it like that. So anyways,
it's just the way it comes out.
It's just the way I do. Anyway, Steven. I'm going to call you Steven. I hope you don't mind. I don't know if you're allowed to be called Steven in Texas, because you might get a beating for that.
Two syllables. Boom, boom. I get you a whoop faster than you can say.
There you go, Steven. Yeah. Bullshit.
Yeah.
Anyway, Steve asks why Uptown Mike was fired from being the producer on the show. Was there a specific incident that happened?
Ooh.
And, there's even more. Boy, you're long-winded, Steve. And he wants to know if Mike was as bad a producer as we say, or are we just joking around? No joke, Steve-o. Uptown Mike was as bad or even worse than we said on the show.
He was bad when he was there. Like, not fully competent. No, that's sugarcoated way too much.
It's giving him too much credit.
Yeah.
Well, we did this before. You started this. Here's a list of things that made Uptown Mike useless as a teat. Useless. And we stated one, that most of the time he didn't show up.
Yep.
The two, ashes. When he showed up, he just read comic books and didn't do anything. So if I needed something and I said, I wonder if that's true. We should look it up on the internet. He was just like, oh.
Of course it's true. Yes, number three.
He told us that we could use one mic for the two of us instead of having two separate mics. And a little bit on us for believing it, but he has a way of saying things.
Yeah, he fooled us a bunch of times. We'll give you some more examples.
Number four is how we did our first 100 shows. Could you tell them that?
Ah, yes. The first 100 shows, we had set up the studio in our first studio. And, you know, everything was going great. It was looking good. And then we were doing some experimentation with the sound equipment. So we took it apart. And then in the course of reassembling it, I realized that Uptown Mike had plugged the output ports, one device into the output ports of another device. Therefore, no signal was ever transmitted into the recording equipment that we set up every week. For 100 shows.
We did 100 shows without microphones, even though we were talking into a mic.
Yeah. You know, we'd adjust stuff, and we'd, how come it always sounds the same?
And if you think we're bullshitting, listen to any one of the first 100 shows, and then listen to any one of the shows after that. You will hear the difference.
You might notice I'm a little louder and clearer than Gary, what with my being closer to the microphone on the computer, which was the only one functioning.
And I mean, was all Mike.
That's a pretty big screw up. That's a pretty big one. That's really blustering your way through a job with absolute knowledge of ignorance.
Now, that's just four that we can think of off the top of our head. There are many more instances of just, oh yeah, like he would be there and then it would be like, oh, at the last minute, sorry, I'm in another country.
But so, bear in mind, most of our disagreements with him are strictly professional.
Yes, yeah, so Mike is in our band. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
It's just as a producer, he's useless as a teat, as we have said.
Yeah, and in the band, I really enjoy playing with him, but sometimes he can be absent. Yeah, that's it.
That's a very good point by Rob. Just like as a producer... When Mike is playing in a rehearsal with us, he can at times be mentally vacant.
that too.
Well, that's what I was expounding on. Or do you mean when he doesn't show up, Rob? Is that what you mean?
I mean when we book a jam and then everyone agrees, and then a week later he's not there, and we know what happened.
Oh yeah, he always does call though. But he always calls sometimes like 2 hours before, and it's like...
And sometimes after.
And sometimes after.
Sometimes after.
He's irascible, but he is a good guy.
Yeah, he's lovable.
But he's not a producer,
per se. Yeah, just like with most people, you know, you have to know how much power to give him. In this case, none.
None.
No.
No. We made a mistake making him producer. We take that on ourselves.
It's our turn to bullshit him.
Time for email number 3.
We've never done 3 emails.
Yeah, we have. We did one on the Christmas show. You know, you're just a hazard on this show. You're a weight that I can't get off my shoulders.
Maybe I'm completely incompetent, but I'm here.
We did actually 4 on the Christmas show, but anyways, email number 3. I'll do it. Email number 3. Email number 3. Thanks. Thank you, Gary.
Thanks,
no
Ed.
Problem. Okay, this is from Jacqueline. Oh, I like that name, Jacqueline.
That's a
from Dearborn, name. Michigan.
Very classy.
I actually have no joke for that.
No.
You think I would have a joke for Jacqueline from Dearborn, Michigan, but I don't. So, yep. Jacqueline says, I don't. I actually don't.
Oh, only 2 things come from Dearborn, Michigan.
Oh, I use that. We use that.
Damn.
So Jacqueline says we were going to do individual albums. Everybody's picking on us, and I find that rude because we try and answer these as nicely and as competently as we can, and yet there's vicious attacks coming from anywhere. Vicious attacks.
Jacqueline, without even hearing your question fully worded, that question has been much on my mind as well.
Hey, Jacqueline. Jacqueline says we were going to do individual albums instead of themes, and yet we have not done that yet.
Yes.
See, this goes back to where I said we say things and we mean them, but sometimes it doesn't turn out that way.
Saying things and meaning them just isn't enough.
You know,
how long ago was
I
that?
Have thought about I think about it every week. I do. I think about it every week, and yet When I pick an album, I go, you know, we got to do a theme on that because we haven't done anything on that. And it wouldn't be cool just to do one album. Mm. And that's kind of what happened so far. Now, I do totally mean to get to that. But there are other things that I realize are really pressing. Like, we've had a lot of deaths this year. We've had a memoriam already. We just did one, which was that aired already or hasn't been aired? I don't know.
I'm going to assume it has, without knowing.
Yeah, I think those ones aired already. We just did one with Gordon Lightfoot and everybody, yeah. And those always take precedent. Those come. We don't never expect them, but they unfortunately happen.
Yeah. You gotta say goodbye.
I did promise this next one.
There has to be closure.
I did promise this next theme like a year and a half ago, and I remember it was exactly a year and a half ago that I said, "Whoa, we're gonna do this theme," and blah blah blah. Yeah, you have to be in my shoes, Jacqueline, to understand that I really do want to do separate albums because it's easier and for all of us. But the themes just kind of jump out. And they're cool themes sometimes. Like the one we're doing is something we've never done. And there's something about just doing like the Ohio Players and then moving on to something else that just doesn't seem right. When the timing is right, it will happen. That's all I can say.
Now, just because it hasn't happened after a half a year or so. Don't give up hope. Because we haven't.
See, that's a good point, though. if I promise something, sometimes I promise it, but it's for maybe 2 years down the road.
Yeah, wait a second. You did say, in the future.
In the future. And I do mean, like, the next couple weeks. Sometimes it turns into the next couple years. Like with doing a video simulcast, we still mean to do that.
We got to hire someone.
Yeah, we do.
Or?
We got people, and they just got to do it. I swear to God, people don't help us. Like, no. In all seriousness, people don't do shit for us, and we always have to do it. And we ask people, and they go, no, I'm too busy. And if we had people who would actually help us, we could do a lot of this stuff. But it ends up being me and Rob doing everything. And it's not easy doing this show.
It's got to be real help. It can't just be pretend help like certain ex-producers. You can't just, make stuff up as you go along in school or something.
You people should have heard Mike when we asked him to be producer and he was all excited. And then the next time he didn't show up. So, I mean, if you're going to help us, you actually have to help us. And we're not getting that help. People, for some reason, and it's been like that for 35 years.
We got to threaten to punch them. That's what we
got
to do.
We got to be more forceful, and we do. We have to say, listen, we need you to be on camera, and it's serious stuff. It's not just us goofing around, and because we never do. People always think we goof around all the time. And it's like, yeah, you think after almost 40 years that all this is just goofing around?
It only appears like that. And that's the brilliance of it.
It is. Yeah. Because we're very affable people and we're very easy to get along with. And people mistake being affable and good-natured people with not being serious. But when we're doing anything, like being in a band, playing music or doing this show, we are dead serious.
Yeah, I'm starting to think at this point, all the people we've asked, they may not be serious.
Yeah. So fuck.
Flaky.
We will probably end up somehow doing a simulcast by ourselves. And it wouldn't surprise me. And at this point, it doesn't disappoint me because I don't expect anything from anybody else anyways. Do we have time for one more? I got one more, but it's already halfway through the show. Should I just do this? I want to save this, I think. I want to save this for another show. 4 emails is a little bit too much. I want to save this.
That's me. It's not Christmas.
It's not Christmas.
It's not Christmas.
I'm going to save this one. It's a good question, though, but I don't want to do it. We're going to save that until... it won't be until the next email. I'll slip it in. In one of the next 2 or 3 shows, okay? Slip it in there. Just like Rob does with his girlfriends. They don't know what's going on, and then he just slips it in.
Yeah, I'm bored. The surprised looks I get.
They're just watching a movie, and then all of a sudden, they just, whoop, right in there.
How'd that get there?
Did you put it in there? Why, you? So, today's album We're going to go right to today's album. Because we're done with email. Now, yeah. Oh, I have to say, before we continue, if you have an email you feel like writing to us, a question, or just telling us how much you love us, which
might,
happens a lot.
You might
want
to be abused.
Or we don't abuse, we just give love.
Just love. It just sounds like abuse.
It
sometimes.
Just sounds like it's, harsh abuse.
Yeah, it's the way we use our voices.
It's different when you actually say it and it comes across on the on your computer. Somehow it's, you know how
the computer changes.
The TV things. makes you put on 5 pounds or whatever. Yeah. This changes our whole inflection.
I hear my voice on the tape and I realize I can't believe I swear that much.
I didn't swear on air. That must have been the computer. So send your questions or love for us or nude pictures if you're a woman. Don't send nude pictures if you're a woman, but if you accidentally do, what the hell? To soundsfromthe70s@gmail.com. What was that? I said soundsfromthe70s@gmail.com. There are no prizes for reading your email on the air, but you can receive one of Rob's very old socks if you choose to have it. I recommend you do not.
We're out of t-shirts.
Now we're just doing this
socks. One sock at a time.
One sock at a time. And like I said, I recommend you do not choose that. I strongly recommend you do not
I
choose
will
that.
Sock it to you.
You will smell something that you have never smelt in your whole life. And not in a good way. So today's album we are reviewing, that's a nice segue, isn't it? Has a total wrong segue into this.
No, because socks, funk.
Oh, socks, funk. Funky socks. Socks. Funk,
funky, yeah. Socks.
Great James Brown song, by the way.
Funky socks. I'm putting on my funky socks.
I'm still mad about that. That one of our best albums that we reviewed, and an album we really loved, is... top three lowest viewed, listened to shows that we ever had. I will never get over that until the numbers raise on that one. Really upset.
The hardest working man in show business, and what's he got to show for his hard work?
Nothing. I even said it like James Brown. I was good, eh? Nothing. So today's album we're reviewing is by funk band, of course, the Commodores from Alabama. And their album is called Hot on the Tracks. As Lionel Richie said, you have to say it. Released in 1976.
I've forgotten about Lionel Richie's strange rule.
I've forgotten about Lionel Richie. How can you forget?
Dad?
What? Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. That was my joke. I forgot about my own joke, people.
I wasn't going to remind you.
Now, the members of the Commodores often billed as the Commodores. That's actually what it says. I'm sorry. The Commodores is an American funk and soul group. Now, I specifically picked an album before they made it big as chartbusters, I guess you could say. This is the album before they released their self-titled Commodores album in 1977, which had Easy on it, which is actually one of my favorite late 70s ballads. It's a perfect song.
Well, that's a nice one. Always gets me when I hear it.
A perfect song. It is, Rob, to me, and I don't want to go on this for too long, but Easy, and I remember it because it was one of the first songs when I started seriously listening to music, and like I said, in the middle of 1977, and it was just released. And to this day, I never get bored of it, and that's been 10, 20, 30, 40, 45 years. I never get tired of that song when I hear it on the radio. Everything about it is perfect. It has that Sunday lazy feeling to it with the piano and then the zinging electric guitar and solo
the
in the middle.
Vocals are,
and then the beautiful horns, which give you that again, that lazy. Beautiful. I think it's a perfect song. I think there's nothing wrong with it in any sort of way. But I wanted to go back to when they were all funk band and soul band before they became had hits with ballads like Three Times a Lady and Easy and all that stuff. to know what they were like. Not a lot. Oh, and they had a big hit with a funk song, not sung by Lionel Richie. Also in 1977, everybody knows of Brick House.
Brick House.
She's
yeah.
a brick house. There might have been a long pause there, but I always envision it that way.
During the long pause, there was a hand held up, like one of the Supremes doing stop.
House. So they did have one funk number that was a hit, but mostly they were a band that before that released four albums that did well, but you know, did mainly well in the urban market, not too much of a crossover. And I think they actually get more critical acclaim by of course the critics and the fans for their early albums because of their funk appeal. So I thought, we're doing funk, let's do Commodores when they were really funky.
When they had funk appeal.
Yeah. So that's why I picked that album and not one of the albums that had the hit singles on it. Now, the members of the group almost all of them met, when they were freshmen at Tuskegee Institute, now known as the Tuskegee University, Rob, in 1968. That's in Alabama, by the way. And they were signed with Motown in November of 1972. They did release a couple of singles between 1969 and their first album in 1974. Obviously, the singles did not do extremely well, or they wouldn't have waited until 1974 to release an album. They're known for this and that, and this and that. I got sidetracked. They have not been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which they should be happy for.
Yeah, I guess
I have my problems, as everybody knows, with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You shouldn't worry about it, Lionel. Lionel, this last induction ceremony, was inducted for his solo career. I'm not going to get into it, but Lionel, who I really like, Lionel Richie. You know, not all of his songs, but I like him as a person, and I like some of his songs. Is not rock and roll. And we're not going to get into that. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to be in the Pop Hall of Fame, because he does. He has written 600 songs or whatever that have been hit singles. But we're not going to get into that. But as the Commodores, don't feel bad for being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Who the fuck knows gets into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? And who cares? But just care about what you did, which is make great music. But they are in the Alabama Music Hall of Fame and the Vocal Group Hall of Fame. And basically, yeah, they were just all friends in college that met and became a band. And they did that thing that the Grateful Dead did when they were picking a name. And the Grateful Dead, this is what Jerry Garcia says anyways, which is go through the dictionary and put your finger on a word.
Right.
And
when I read that story,
when Jerry Garcia did it, they came up on the Grateful Dead. Somehow, I don't know how it did, or some book where it came up in the Grateful Dead, and they did it. The Commodores did it on with a dictionary, and it almost was the Commodes.
The Commodes.
Sorry, but then it was below that the fingers.
The Commodores.
Which was
the next one.
Yeah, the next one, which is a great name. I think it's a great name, and
that's where you just kind of roll your finger down a bit. And no, not Commode.
Something I forgot about, which I remembered when I was a kid, when I saw the Commodores play the Midnight Special or something like that, was that Lionel Richie played the saxophone in the band.
I'll take your word for it.
And the keyboards a little bit. They actually had a keyboard player, but he would play keyboards for ballads and stuff like that. But he actually was mainly a singer and a saxophone player, which is pretty cool. And yeah, so they released their first album in 1974 called Machine Gun, which did pretty good. And then they released their second album called Cotney Act. Hey, I've been Cotney Act. I've never heard that word before.
I'm going to
tell you something. Should I say this, Rob?
No, because words are bad. And they're being
I don't know if this means anything. Their third album was called Moving On, and then they made this album in 1976. caught hard on the tracks. I don't know. There's something
wrong.
There's something wrong. There is. First of all, I find the title of their albums to be boring. And I don't know if that's me, but I just find that there's a lack of art in it. It's just like, oh, let's call this Hot Matrax.
That's a good safe one.
Yes, safe is a good word. Very neutral. Yep. And I find that their album, and I find this very important, and I am going to do a theme on this. I almost did it for this week, but I said, no, we got to do email, and then Robbie Robertson died, and I'm going to put it back a little bit. But I'm going to get into marketing of things because that's what I'm really good at. This is, you know, I've studied music since 1977, since I started listening to it. And you have to have after, it's like if you're a mechanic and you've been a mechanic and you've studied it and you've done everything since you were like 12 years old, you're going to be a pretty fucking good mechanic.
You know a lot more than other mechanics.
You know a lot more than other mechanics who just do stuff as it comes along or whatever. I've studied this. I've absorbed everything that I've listened to and read since 1977. So I feel that I know quite a bit about... Everybody knows quite a bit about the something that they love. Like whether it's their job that they do or their hobby... Everybody knows a lot about that. Well, I know with this. This has been my life since 1977. Literally been everything since 1977. So I know what I'm talking about is what I'm saying. I'm not trying to be pompous, but I'm just saying it's just a matter of being around it all the time. You learn things. And one thing I've learned when I immediately did background information on the Commodores was I didn't like their album covers. I thought they were boring, just like their album titles. They got a little bit better as they became famous, but I found that I was going like, oh, that's a wrong cover to use for this album. I find this cover to be boring for Hot on the Tracks. It actually, I think, diminishes the people buying the album. I will get into that one more when I talk about it in future episodes. But I just want to space this, talk about this with the Commodores, in that they're a really good band, but they don't think about the art, which is the artistic end of being
an album,
in a group.
Yeah.
Yes, being creative, thinking of a good title, thinking of an album.
As a concept, thinking about the artwork, thinking about all the aspects of the album rather than just playing the music.
You know how important that is to me because we've talked about it on many shows.
If you don't do that stuff, someone else will do it for you. And then you have to be angry with them.
Yes.
I don't want to be angry with anyone.
So if you have boring ideas, which I do think they do, not musically, but for the other stuff, which is just as important. Trust me, when you go into a record store... And yep. I know firsthand, Rob knows firsthand, when you go into a record store and you got a boring album cover, I'm telling you, it goes down. I don't care if you came in to buy that album. You can be easily persuaded not to buy that album. Maybe never. I've done that before. I've gone into an album wanting to buy an album, saw some other albums that really attracted me, and I ended up saying, oh, I'll buy it next time, and now never buying it.
Never get around to it. That's
never get
album.
Around to it.
I think I was telling the story how I never listened to the first two Blue Oyster Cult albums for the longest time, just because the album covers.
Yeah, you know, you told that story before on the show, and it's exactly right. Like, it's exactly...
I love the band, I love their music, but I was going to get through all the albums... outside those two, just
it's exactly what I'm talking about, and I love that story because it shows, and it's not just us, it's everybody. If you either do it, you don't go in there with that, but you in the back of your head subconsciously, yeah, you do that.
Yeah,
and I have
you
done
are
that
attracted to. I mean, some of the albums that I used to buy was based upon the album cover.
Yes,
I mean, yeah, I knew a bit about the music, but you see a really inventive, imaginative album cover, and you think, okay, there's got more to this band than
we've had it happen firsthand when we've gone shopping. Oh. And so I was a little let down. It actually was one of the first things that popped into my head when I was doing work the homework on the Commodores, because I don't have to do too much homework usually on the music of the band or the artists that we do. I just have to do a lot of backgrounds on what was their album titles like? How did their early albums do compared to their middle albums, compared to their end albums, as far as critically and commercially? I take all that into account, what their album covers look like. All that goes into account in what I think of the artist. And in this, I find that I think the Commodores would be much more appreciated band than they already are, which they are a very much appreciated band, if they had put some more thought into album titles. And I didn't know any of their album titles.
The packaging.
Even though they were on the radio all the time, I mean, you call your album that's going to be big self-titled, just call it the Commodores. You call it that the first album when you're trying to not impress people with the title, because you just want to introduce your band as the Commodores and you don't want it to get confused with the album title, right? So I have a hard time, unless you're the Beatles and release it and it becomes the White Album, I have a hard time with releasing it like your eighth album as self-titled.
Self-titled, yeah, that is unusual.
It is unusual, and I didn't like it, and I just found almost all their albums.
Okay, we've been getting better. Now we finally got it down. Now we're finally, and this is the band we are.
That just stinks of either laziness or just being boring as artists. Not artists musically, but I mean artists as creatively thinking.
I picked the last album. You don't know I picked the last one. You got to pick this one.
Okay, let's call it next album.
All right, we can't remember who picked the last one, next album.
So, just before we review the album, Lionel Richie did most of the vocals. But everybody kind of wrote. Lionel wrote most of the songs, but everybody had a hand in writing. The Commodores were not Lionel Richie and the Commodores. The Commodores were very much a band. I mean, if they were Lionel Richie and the Commodores, he probably never would have left. Why leave? He has a good backup band. But they weren't a backup band. You had other people singing. You had other people writing songs.
Other people's musical ideas, too. Yes, yeah.
Exactly. So that's where we kind of come to. With their last, this is Hot on the Tracks, is their last full funk album before they hit it big and then became known as a funk / ballad band. And there's nothing wrong with that other than Three Times a Lady, which I hate. And trust me, oh God, in 1978, that song got played. I felt every 20 minutes. And I just hated it. But actually, his ballads are very good, except for that one. I just hate that song. But he writes really kind of cool ballads in a way. Like, they're not your traditional "I love you, I love you" kind of bullshit.
No, that he gets to the chorus and there's odd chord changes.
Yes.
I know some of the ballads on this one.
Very, very musically. Yeah, and the ballads on this, I'm not saying there's not ballads on this, but they're more soul. Yes. Soul R&B ballads than the piano.
Yeah,
type
they're
of,
not the schlocky David Foster-y
right.
kind of.
It's the sugary ones. This is a lot more urban-based ballads, we'll get to that in a second when we review the album. I don't think I have anything more to say about the background of this band. Let's just get straight to the album. Nope. That's the wrong window. Hey, Ruff, that's the wrong window.
That's our album from 4 weeks ago.
You want me to go first? I want to go first.
Yeah, go first.
Okay.
Because I'll just be chirping along as you go, and all my points will come out anyway.
I like this album. You know, this is a good story, actually. I listened to this this album the first time. I was in a bad mood. I admit I was in a bad mood, and secondly, I admit that I was kind of on a high with the War album that we had just reviewed, and was expecting it to sound like that, which is something that even I take for granted sometimes, because every album's different. Just because it's funk doesn't mean every funk band sounds the same, just like every rock band doesn't sound the same.
You're thinking of punk.
Yeah. Well, I love punk, so fuck you. So, So I thought, oh, this is so average. That was my first thing. I said, oh, I expected so much more, so average. But I was having a really bad day. A couple of days later, I listened to it the second time, and I had a complete reversal, and I loved everything about it. But I was in a really good mood that day, and everything went out to me. Oh, the horns came in perfect. Oh, my, this is an incredible album. And then I listened to it a third time. This is when I got sick.
Okay, and that's
and good. So I was very neutral because I couldn't be stirred almost by anything. You know how you're very, you listen to it, but it doesn't affect you because you're not feeling well?
You're exhausted.
You're not in a bad mood. You're just exhausted. Yeah. Exactly. You're just exhausted. I listened, I said, well, it's not as fabulous as I thought it was last time, but it's not as bad. It's just good. It's just really good. And then I listened to the fourth time, and that's the conclusion I came to after the fourth time, which is... I think it's a really, really good album. I just don't think it's like an excellent album, but I really do like it. I like that it starts out... it's kind of a tame version of funk, not as tame as the Ohio Players, and not as diverse and alive as War, but right in the middle. Which means they're not really commercial and going for that old baby stuff like the higher players are doing. Yeah. But they're still not like out there like Parliament Funkadelic. They're right in the middle. They're like we wanna reach an audience, but we also don't wanna be like just talking about old babies type of stuff. It's kind of a thinking man's funk band without being really smart like War was and cool. So it's really right in the middle, but it for what it does, for what they do, I should say, they do it really well. And I like the start with Let's Get Started, and you know, the band kind of comes in. I like Lionel Richie writes the first six songs on this record, the first side and the two songs on side two that start side two are either written alone by Lionel Richie or co-written by Lionel Richie. And those are the best songs on the album.
The first two on the second side?
The first side and the first two songs on the second side have Lionel Richie on the songwriting credits. And those are the ones that I really liked. I like Girl, I Think the World About You. It's a very nice ballad. It has... I think that's a song with the Barry White type singing. Is that the one? Maybe I'm thinking of the other one. Just to be close to you.
Yeah, the talk singing was
just to be close to you.
Just to be close to you.
Which I also liked. I didn't like the talk singing too much.
You know, I didn't like the talk singing up until he shifted it into singing. Yes. And then suddenly I retroactively liked it. It was like, okay, yeah, now that makes sense.
You're right. When he started to talk, I thought, oh, this doesn't work. But then when I heard it the second time, and I knew that there was singing involved, and then it really worked. It was kind of like a
it does
a
when
prelude.
He goes from the talking into the singing. It's just, okay. That's now I see what you're going for. Yeah.
I really like the first side. I like that High on Sunshine was very catchy. Again, very smart. Like smarter than the Ohio Players. I'm going to say this like three or four times. Smarter than the Ohio Players intellectually, but not as adventurous as War. Right in the middle, but smart enough that therefore you could dance to them if you just want to listen to the music, and also be stimulated by the thoughtfulness of the music and the chord changes and everything. So and then side two starts off, and this is very much a Lionel Richie song, Fancy Dancer, which I really liked. Very up-tempo R&B funk song. Didn't like Come Inside too much, which was the last Lionel Richie song on the album. And then the album really died for me, unfortunately. That's when Lionel Richie, it's funny, but it goes like, let's put all the Lionel Richie songs on there. And then at the end, when people get tired, we'll put all the other guys' songs on there. And it sounds like, actually, Thumpin' Music wasn't a bad song. Thumpin' Music was not bad.
Thumpin' Music, I swear I've heard somewhere before. I can't say I know I've heard it, but I'm pretty sure I've heard that song.
There's a familiarity to that song I also have. I may have heard it and have...
I don't know.
And I've never found out who it was.
Old time radio. I don't know.
You're right. But actually, I do like that song. It's not up to the Lionel Richie standards of the previous songs, but I do like thumping music. But Captain Quickdraw and the last two songs, Captain Quickdraw and Can't Let You Tease Me, are just not up to the snuff of the previous record, and just sounds like filler and almost like, okay, you wrote a song, okay, we'll put it at the end of the album. I guess my total thing is that actually this is a pretty solid album by a very solid band. And I think that they probably wouldn't sell more records than they already are if they would have stayed a funk band. But neither did any of the other bands. Neither did Parliament Funkadelic or War or anybody else. They actually had to cross over into the pop territory. But if they did just this, they would have been just as good a band, if not even thought of more critically than they were, because everybody always thinking of, oh, the Lionel Richie Ballads. Yeah, everybody always thinks the Commodores as the, oh yeah, the Lionel Richie Ballads, but there's so much more than that. And I liked it. I give it 4 stars, and it's better than the 2.5 I was going to give it on first listen. But it's still, even though it's 4 stars, which is a really good rating for us, I still find that they don't have the inventiveness of like a Parliament or a War.
No.
A Funkadelic, I should say. One of my favorite albums of all time that we have reviewed was Maggot Brain.
That was a surprise. That was really cool. I wasn't expecting
that. That was a 5-star classic record. Of course, you can't compare a 5-star classic record to, you know, every other band, but this is nowhere like that. This is much safer, let's just say.
Yes, definitely. First thing I wrote down on the first listen, this is very slick funk. There's not the rough edges or any standout in a rough way
parts. You can definitely tell the rough edges are taken out. They're still smarts, but the rough edges are taken out. Yes.
Like I said, there's a bunch of places where the chord changes. They start off normal in the verse, and then they get to the chorus, and they just switch to something I wasn't expecting, but it's something really nice.
Mm-hmm.
I started off kind of indifferent to this album. And I kind of grew to not. I wasn't looking forward to listening to it by about the 5th or 6th listen. I don't know if I'd been funked out, but
you know what, I was.
I was definitely funked out.
That's why we only do a lot of shows with the theme of similar music for 3 shows, is because I was, and I knew I was. I knew by the end of like the 4th listen of this that I had had enough of funk for a while, and that I didn't want to listen to this album. And didn't matter what album it was, funk wise, I didn't. We had reached our limit.
I think I'd hit the limit on funk with each listen, because the last song I have very little memory of every time.
Oh yeah, it is forgettable. It is forgettable.
But we do differ on a few things. On first listen, I decided Captain Quickdraw was my favorite song on the album.
Holy shit!
Last listen, I still decided that was my favorite song on the album.
And I think it's a real dog. I think it's a waste of space. I think it's an absolute waste of space. And I'm looking at the lyrics, which make no sense. In fact, it even sounds like they're garbled, because it's like two sentences put into one that makes no sense whatsoever.
Fight the power, pirate radio.
Fuck. Yeah, it goes off into different areas, and then, hey, how are you doing? It's like, what the fuck? I just hated it. And in fact, when I listened to it and I didn't know the words to it, I kind of thought, well, this is kind of cool, the kind of talk. And then when I kind of got the words and kind of really listened to it, I was like, fuck, I hate this. But
I like to talk, and I
can
certainly
see
like the music,
how a person
backing it up.
Like you, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean how certain people could really like this song. You have to like something like that. It's different. It's what we're talking it about is does. That sick eye kind of talking. This
one stands out from all the other yeah. ones I heard on the album.
Can, you, and, can we just describe why we're talking? It's because this song where the guy's kind of talking in the funk background.
It sounds like he's a really cool funk DJ.
Yes, that's what it sounds like. Yeah, and he's kind of talking like he's a DJ. He's not singing. And I could see how people could like that. I just despised it. I just thought it was, like I said, I really thought it was like put on there because... Fuck, we still have 8 minutes we have to put out.
No, not that song you had. That idea you had.
That's what it sounds like. Well, I was just goofing around. Good enough.
Sometimes you can't finish a song. You just got to make up a line. Sometimes you can't finish an album. You just got to make up a song.
But it can also be, like, for you, very appealing, too.
Yeah, I
did. Depends on the taste of that.
I did that one I enjoyed. There's probably about 4 or 5 songs in the album I enjoyed. And then a bunch more were... About half of mine, it didn't stick with me. It just didn't hit me all that much. I thought the playing was very good. I didn't think it was great, but it was very good. Very tight, very well done.
Not adventurous. Not even as adventurous as the Ohio players. No,
that's why I say it was slicker than those other bands.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what other comments I had. I kind of didn't like the first side, not so much in the content, but just the arrangement. I mean, they open up with this song that puts you in a party mood, and they go into 3 softer songs. It's like, I wanted to keep partying, damn you.
No, it's true. And the thing that bugged me about Let's Get Started is the part where the whoever is talking in the band is going like, hey, everybody go do this and everybody do that. And it's like in the studio and it sounds hokey to me. Like if you're doing it live, well, do it live, but don't do it in the studio because it sounds stupid when you go clap your hands and it's like I'm at home when I'm listening. What the fuck you want me to do? And it was really almost in a way insulting because it was almost like, well, this is meant, you wrote this for the stage and yet you're kind of putting it on the record so that you have a stage song. And I'm kind of a little bit insulted. Like, you don't have to say that stuff. Just play the song and then do it differently when you get on the stage. Like, do it like that on the stage, right? Where you say, clap your hands and let's get funky and all that stuff.
Yeah, I think they were trying to give a live feel. And I remember in the 60s, they do kind of records where they have a party kind of atmosphere.
Oh, yeah, but those are frat rock things. And the reason those songs... For all you ones who want a little education here, the reason that they did so that you would sing them actually in the frat houses, like it'd go Lue Lue, and then everybody would sing as they're having a party.
Johnny Rivers used to do that.
Yes, if you're having a party, you'd put those songs on. There's a whole bunch of them, the frat rock songs, a double shot of my baby's love, so many songs like that. Yes, I agree because they're what you're saying, because there is kind of like a faux type of audience there that's listening, even though it's made up.
It's and a good song that if it would have added
but there's no like audience. Jumpy chorus in there like a Louie Louie. What I'm saying is that it's like, I don't know. It's like, yeah, they could have just played the song without all that. Yeah, everybody get up and...
They're trying to put you into a party mood and the party kind of doesn't follow.
Right.
It doesn't pick up again till the second side.
It's just not catchy enough a tune with a chorus that you could sing over again to make you want to do that. And I just felt it was out of place. Somebody may think it's all right, but I just think it's put there to be a really good song on stage, not on a record.
Yeah, I think it's a good opener, but it's not opening for... In your case, it's not opening a stage show, and in my case, it's not opening... It doesn't continue the mood.
It is jarring, isn't it?
Immediately stops.
I never thought about that, but it is jarring to have, hey, this is a real cool fucking album. Let's all
get ready to party.
And then it's like, girl, I think the world about you.
It could have been put in a more appropriate place.
So the song, you know what would have been good? This is us trying to sequence the album. It would have been good if it went into like Fancy Dancer and then Come Inside and stuff like that.
And break up the softer songs a bit rather than clumping them together like that. Yeah. Mind you, having said that, I did like High on Sunshine. The second one that you really liked, Girl, I Think the World About You, that's one that did just went off like water on a duck there for me.
Oh, really? Okay. You know, it can happen like that.
By.
because they're ballads and they're R&B ballads. Some work for some people and some don't. I just like them.
Yes.
I just like them and you didn't like that one, and I understand. I was kind of a little bit iffy on it for a while, and then it kind of grew on me, and I was going, oh, this is kind of really good. I like that. I think I liked his ballads because of what we said before, is that they weren't sappy like they became.
Yeah.
You know, just piano and kind of strings, that they were kind of, they were very R&B funk, R&B soul based. And I like that.
Yeah. I mean, they're still ballads, but they're not like the schlocky, here's definitely some syrup for you.
Yes, I agree.
Definitely more funk based ballads.
And the band's playing. And in the other ones, it could have just been Lionel on piano with session musicians, because it didn't really matter. What mattered was the song and the piano and his voice. Yeah. And this, you had to have the band on these songs.
I appreciate other people do that. It's not a thing I'd ever want to do. I need the band in there, other ideas, other brains at work.
It's kind of like when Paul McCartney doing Yesterday by himself. You know, it's one of the greatest songs ever written, but the band isn't on it. You know what I mean? That's kind of like Lionel Richie after this album. Is like when he had ballads, it could have been anybody backing him up, because he didn't really use them. He just used them as like ornamentation instead of actually a band. And that's another reason why I picked this album before they became like that. So that we could understand, you know, what kind of a funk band they were.
Yeah, what they evolved to during the funk times.
Did you like Fancy Dancer? I like that song.
I liked it because it picked up. I don't think lyrically didn't grab me. Didn't think it was bad, but didn't grab me. But yeah, because it picked up on the second side there. Come Inside didn't stick with me too much. Thumpin' Music and Captain Quickdraw I liked on the second side. Yeah, I liked about 4 of the 9 songs.
I think we definitely agree that Can't Let You Tease Me is one of the most forgettable songs. It's neither terrible nor is it great. It's one of the worst things you can be, which is forgettable.
You know, the one thing is, anytime you listen to the Commodore sound, it sounds really good, like they just have a really good sound to them, even if the song is not...
Perfectly said. Even a song like Can't Let You Tease Me, which just is a very average song, still sounds extremely good as far as how it sounds.
Yeah, this is... if it's not a good song, this is what a good band can do to a song like that.
Exactly. Very, very professional. Maybe for us, especially for me, as you know, I like the rough edges of music. It's a little bit too slick for us, but it's not really meant for us in the first place. It's meant for more of an R&B audience who likes the slickness. The urban audience really does like that stuff. They also, though, like the kind of freakiness of funkadelic and war. But this is the stuff that really, to be honest with you, this is the stuff that really... became more of the R&B from the 80s on than, you know, Parliament Funkadelic kind of after the 70s was gone. That music never really came back. As with War, that kind of music is only heard on, well, like I said, you don't hear albums like that
anymore.
You only
hear that from the 70s.
So as cool as Funkadelic and War are, which they are unbelievably cool, they're only cool for that time period. This is the music that we hear nowadays. This is the music that the urban black audience decided that they liked. It wasn't the crazy kind
and
of
in them liking it. Record companies and producers worked to keep it going.
Right.
This the next little thing. I'm just gonna put on the Senator Bob voice for this. I did make a list of who these songs were addressed to. They were not to me. They were a lot of them, a bunch for someone named Girl and someone named Baby.
Someone named Girl.
Get Started was addressed to someone named Baby, and also children were mentioned there. The second song, Girl, I Think the World About You, was, of course, for Girl. High on Sunshine has no named audience. Just to Be Close to You is for Girl. Fancy Dancer is for Girl. Come Inside is for baby. Thumping Music and Captain Quickdraw, as near as I can tell, are not directed at any one audience. And Can't Let You Tease Me is not directed at girl or baby, but missus. So the point I'm trying to make is a bunch of these songs are not directed at me as a listener, which is not a criticism. It's just a very good point.
I never thought about that.
I did go through on the lyrics and decided, okay, who they were writing for? Girls and babies. But a lot.
You know what?
But they also had the few songs that are in the... they're not so much for a girl or baby or any particular person. They're feel-good songs.
Oh, High on Sunshine.
High on Sunshine. I really like that song. Let's Get Started is meant to be a feel-good song. And Thumpin' Music is that jump to it. Yeah. I agree with that.
And you know what? I never thought about it before, but you bringing that up, maybe that's why R&B is not... my favorite genre of music.
Yeah.
It's because a lot of that is like that girl. I mean, Barry White is always girly girl. And,
yeah.
And it's not, it doesn't attract, it's not the kind of music or lyrics that we're attracted to.
Lyrically, you know, you definitely noticed it with the Ohio Players.
Yeah. Oh, I hated that as far as the lyrics were concerned.
The lyrics went from, I can ignore them to this is making me angry.
And that even goes into the Prince era. Of the 80s, well, the whole time Prince, until he died, was always, like, you know, sexual. And his was very smart, though. It was still a lot lyrically like this, except a little bit more risque. And I was never all that into Prince either. It just didn't speak. Some of his stuff did. But... That's such a good point, Rob, because maybe subconsciously that's why this type of music lyrically doesn't involve me as much as other forms of music.
I mean, the Ohio Players and these guys, it was definitely the musicianship that...
So you have to have emotion behind that.
And the musical writing.
Which is soul music, which, you know, 70s soul music I love, like an Al Green singing or whatever, because... It doesn't matter what they're singing. It's how they emote it. You're almost like, oh, it makes me cry because they're emoting so much emotion, without a better word, that you get drawn into it. This is meant to be more clinical, which means the singing isn't meant to be, girl, yes. I think the world about you. It's more like, girl, I think the world about... And you have to relate to the song in that structured format other than the kind of free-form soul, which I love. But soul is also rougher. At least it was in the 70s. It was also, you know, like we were just talking, Billy Paul with Me and Mrs. Jones. Like, that maybe done more straight wouldn't get to me. But every time I hear that song on the radio, the way he sings it and how he puts so much emotion into it, it just gets to me. But if he does it like a Lionel Richie style, I would be probably just be like, yeah.
I wouldn't quite have it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's also such a thing as, well, as a listener, as a male listener, that could be too much.
Yes.
In moderation, I think I could, it wouldn't... bug me as much, but I do know sometimes it really drives me away that these
points that you brought up have been not only valid but more than valid, because I thought of everything about this album, and there was two or three things that subconsciously I think were always there and I never thought about them.
I had to do a girl and baby count. very good points,
and
I give this one a 3.5.
Okay, well, that's pretty good. That's a very good album.
I think there's a whole bunch of good points on it. There's just about, like I say, about half of it was not that memorable. But once again, I like funk playing. I love funk musicianship.
As we're not big fans of girl type lyrics, like, oh, get into my bed type thing. That's where me and Rob kind of lost.
Yeah, maybe I'd get like an album like this if I had a really hot date.
Well, we got,
and she was
we
coming
got,
back to my
we
place.
We totally got into it with War, and we got into it with Funkadelic, because they don't talk like that. Their songs are about a whole bunch of other things. And that's when we went goo-goo, was over War and Funkadelic.
That's more relatable for me.
Yeah. And this
type of... I can relate to some of this, but too much over and over.
40 minutes of it is a little bit too much for us. It's just not like I said, our forte.
It had some breaks in it.
Our forte musically. I know we want to put that, because I love funk music. I could listen to instrumental funk music all the time, but if you're going to put lyrics like the Ohio Players put on it, the music better be really good, because I have to almost tune out that kind of shit. Yeah.
That sometimes pushes me away, and then the musicianship pulls me back.
But luckily, in the 70s, before it got automated and fake drums and all that crap that they play nowadays, it was. Most of the funk music was very into you, like the really Ohio Players.
Good, which, imaginative players.
Yes. As much as there was a dead sound in the room on the Ohio Players album, I could not deny that the music was very attractive. You know? As much as I really detested that it sounded like there was a wall recorded in front of them, if you took the wall back, I knew that there was great music being played. And I love funk music. Mm-hmm. I wish there was funk music. There is almost no funk music anymore.
The funk is gone.
That's why we praise the 70s so much. It is the time when they all existed until the time when some of the forms of music cease to exist.
Nowadays, you only ever hear little bits of songs that have been influenced by stuff like that.
Yeah. Very true.
Very strange.
So I give it 4. You give it 3.5.
I give it 3.5.
And I guess what we're saying is if you're a fan of funk music, you will like this album a lot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Oh, they're good. They're just good players. They've been playing together for a while, and they've got a sound down. They've got an interesting way of looking at music, and it shows in this album.
I think that has shown on all 3 albums we have reviewed in this theme is, and it doesn't surprise me.
All those players had done multiple albums by the time we listened to the album we reviewed. So
yes, and they've gotten all the kinks out that they needed to get out. And funk is not easy to play, no matter what people may tell you. It's not, because you kind of got to get everybody on the same page, and you got a lot of players. Look how many people you got playing in war. And the Ohio Players, look how many you got. Every 3 of these bands, you've got at least 6 people playing, on this music. And in every instance, we were talking about how great the musicianship is on all 3 albums.
Yeah. There are some forms of music where you can kind of get away with not having really good feel, but not this. This big feature of funk music is the feel these guys have.
It is.
It's just bang on.
It is. And funk isn't just funk. As we've realized, there's like funkadelic funk. There's Commodore's funk. There's war type funk. There's James Brown funk, which there's nothing like. And there's nothing like funkadelic funk. That's a lesson that I learned. Even as much as I like funk music, I realized from doing these shows that there's different kinds of funk. There's commercial funk. There's non-commercial adventurous funk. And you know what? We have none of that now. We just have none of it anymore.
Record companies, they're not going to support anything unless you got a hit single, which I kind of sort of respect, except where do the hit singles come from? You got to develop artists.
They just don't have... I don't think... I think funk is too urban for the white audiences. I don't think it was in the 70s. People were a lot more open to music in the 70s. War, a little bit of the Ohio Players, they they could cross over with their funk music. A lot of white people liked Parliament Funkadelic. And a lot of people liked War up to a point. And it just got to a time when there were so many brands of music, and I think it started to divide, and it started to say, you know what?
Because you divide music that much, you're also dividing the audience, the paying audience as well. So
you know what? And then you're losing the white audience. You're saying, wow, that's great, but you know what? I really like this a little bit more, and then all of a sudden you leave funk behind. Because it's great, but it's not your top 3 or 4. So your music, as you get older, your values change. As far as instead of buying 6 albums, you're buying a week, you're buying 2, and so forth. That's how music changes, and that's why music, some genres of music, unfortunately, get into the not disappeared. Funk music will always be there, but it'll be very marginal. Just like jazz is very marginal. And we were talking about something else being very marginal. Well, progressive rock being almost non-existent, even though it's there. It doesn't sell except to progressive rock people, just like funk only sells to funk people. And that's a shame, because in the 70s, they all coexisted and they all sold well enough to be all branded as selling music.
And, yeah, and they kind of they popped up at different times and during the 70s. But
and that's why we celebrate all these types of music. This show is not just about, like we said, it could be very easy just to do one type of music or two. But the 70s were a golden period because it allowed all types of music. For an album like War's Why Can't We Be Friends to shoot up into the top 10 of albums on a basically white album chart to like Billboard, where a lot of the majority is white listeners, it was such an open time that anything could be number one or anything could go in the top 10. And that's why we do the varieties. Anybody asks, and we've answered this question a couple times, why do you do every type of music? Because in the 70s, every type of music was important.
Yeah, and the other thing is, in doing the show, I keep getting surprised by types of music that I can't say written off, but I didn't think would appeal to me, and I'd never really been exposed to them, and a bunch of surprises.
Hey, I get surprised too, and I thought I was a Mr. Know-It-All. Every time I think I'm a Mr. Know-It-All, there's always an album that surprises me. Every time. I get put in my place.
I don't look forward as much to doing albums that I've heard before and I'm familiar with, but they got to be done. We got to do them all.
Yeah, there's still, my God, this is like our fourth year. We got to cut this short because my voice is going. But this is our fourth year, and we still have genres. Not many, but we still have a couple of genres to do.
We haven't hit
yet. Yeah. Well, that's our show for today. As usual, we hit the 80-minute mark. That's like we are wont to do. We are taking next week off. We're not really. We have to catch up.
The show is taking next
week. The show is that when you tune in next week, there will not be a show put up.
We never stop.
We're working so hard. Sometimes we work too hard.
We got our miner's helmets with the lights on and we're just digging.
Yeah. We had done quite a few shows in a few weeks because we had to catch up from the move.
Yeah.
We did get like a little break there. Thank God I really needed a break. Even though I was sick, it was still a break. And then we have to do like four shows in a row now. And that's okay because I got my weekend. Yes. I just wanted my weekend. So there will be no show next week when you turn up. But in 2 weeks, we will have our tribute to Robbie Robertson. And then after that, we will be doing our theme, which instead of four albums, will just be three now. But it's a good theme. Okay. I'm really looking forward to this theme. So
it doesn't have anything to do with the Gooby Grape, does it? Love that Gooby
Grape. They're not going to understand Gooby Grape. We're going to have to bring them up to snuff in a couple weeks.
Okay, no Gooby Grape.
Okay, everybody. So for the last time, I will be saying take care and stay funky, because we're not going to stay funky after today.
Nope. The funk is gone.
Okay, bye, everybody. So what you're saying is that you're fucking up big time, like usual. You're fucking up big time.
That's what I want to see right there.